First up, on this Earth Day, we take a micro look at the environment and the struggles facing those who are trying to protect the Earth. With us are Glenn Prickett. He's with the Nature Conservancy. Glenn, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
And also here is Larry Rizzo, who's with the Missouri Department of Conservation. He's a natural history biologist. And Larry, welcome to the show. Nice to have you, too.
Good morning, Steve.
Well, Glenn, let me begin with you. As you look around the world, I think everyone assumes the picture is getting worse when it comes to the environment. Is that an accurate view or not?
No, I don't think so. I'm an optimist, Steve. All of us at the Nature Conservancy are. Well, I think everybody at the Nature Conservancy is. And what really gives us hope is what we see happening in communities all around the world. There's increasing strong support for the health of our lands and waters. We saw that recently across the U.S. in the Nature Conservancy. We support ballot measures at the state and local level all across the country every election year. And in 2014, we supported six ballot measures in states from Florida to Maine to California. We won five of those by 60% plus majorities. And basically what these measures do is they ask citizens to devote public revenue to conservation, to clean up lands and waters and keep the environment healthy. And we won those by overwhelming majorities. In Florida, home to the Everglades, we created or recreated a state conservation program with a 70% majority voting in favor of it to protect the lands and waters in Florida. So that gives us hope.
But still, you get this overwhelming sense that with climate change, the macro picture is not nearly as bright as the picture you're painting.
I think that's where the challenge is. So if you think about this country, we've gotten much cleaner in our local environments. We've cleaned up our air. We've cleaned up our water, the things people can touch and feel.
Right.
The challenge we've got now is much more indirect, right? So we're experiencing climate change that affects all of us, but it's harder to connect what I do every day, what you do every day, to that impact. So educating people, helping them see the connection between what they do in their daily life and some of these global issues like climate change or ocean acidification, that's really where the challenge is.
Yeah. Larry, are you as bullish on where we are with the environment as Glenn or not?
I am, and I think folks in our field, hopefully, are and have to be, because you don't want to get to a stage where you think it's just all hopeless. Mm-hmm. And I think the important thing to look at is, since this is Earth Day and why we're here today, to think back of what happened, what things were like when the first Earth Day came around, what state we were in, and you know, things like the Endangered Species Act, Clean Air, Clean Water Act, Missouri River being large in our region, bringing it home was largely an open sewer, and things like that. And think of where we've been and where we are now. And yeah, we made tremendous strides. There's still plenty of big problems out there, of course, but no reason not to be optimistic.
Again, maybe I read the newspapers too much. I work for a newspaper, so imagine that. But this notion that climate change has gotten away from us, Larry, is that a point of view you share, that it's too late, in a sense, to sort of reclaim that part of our environmental heritage?
That's kind of a policy issue at levels above the level of my job. My job and the way I look at my concerns with climate have to do more specifically with plants and animals and what we see on the landscape. And I do think we are seeing changes, and I think we will in the future, changes that will affect, for instance, the distribution of plants and animals, where we find them. Changing climate will be to benefit some things, not others, and we're not always sure on which those will be. And to try to stay on top of that kind of thing and plan for the future is a big challenge.
What are you seeing in Missouri? You know, Larry, as you look around your world, Missouri and Kansas, I mean, what environmental issues are you sort of focused on, and are they getting better or are they getting worse?
Well, there's always the ongoing issue in our agency of habitat loss, and that's will always be an issue.
And explain that. What is habitat loss?
Places for plants and animals to live. And, you know, we have a lot of public land, and we can protect species on the public lands, but oftentimes those public lands aren't enough. They're not a large enough scale to protect all the species out there.
Right.
And so there's a challenge of trying to protect habitat and species on private lands as well. And we actively do that, but it's an ongoing challenge. There's challenges with invasive species, and invasive animals get lots of attention, but in the course of my work, we battle plants a lot more. Invasive exotic plants are a big challenge.
Like what?
Oh, there are many, many of them. If you look around our city, we're overrun with one called shrub honeysuckle. You can probably look right across the street and see it here. What those things do very subtly is really destroy biological diversity in our natural communities mm-hmm. in different ways.
I mean, they choke out other plants.
Absolutely. The mm-hmm. native species and other native plants and, in turn, animals that depend on them. So they're very insidious.
And where does that plant come from, and how did it get here, or do you
Well,
know?
That particular one came from Asia. It was used in landscaping and escaped, and that's a story that repeats itself many times. Mm-hmm. Others have gotten here in other ways, but there are many, many species like that, and there's constantly new ones popping up, and we're forced to kind of draw lines in the sand where it comes to those and protect the places that have the greatest biological diversity. And in some cases, kind of let things play out as they will in other places.
Yeah. Glenn, what should we be worried about? Again, the macro picture here. What should be most concerning to us?
Well, as I said, I think the greatest challenge are these global issues that are hard to connect to our day-to-day life. Climate change is an example of that. The loss of habitat, as Larry was describing, that's happening around the world, and a lot of it is driven by things as basic as the food we eat or the products we buy. Those come now out of global supply chains, and soybeans that we eat here could be grown in Brazil and could result in the loss of forests in the Amazon, for example. Mm-hmm. So connecting the dots between our day-to-day life and some of these bigger global issues, I think, is the real challenge. There are some bright spots in both what communities are doing, what businesses are doing. On that issue of deforestation in the Amazon, for example, that's really turning around now. You've got leadership in Brazil that's committed to reducing deforestation. Mm. And interestingly, you've got leaders in the business community, companies as diverse as McDonald's, Walmart, Cargill, they're all teaming up to say, how do we eliminate deforestation in the supply chains for the food products we consume? Huh. So there are signs of hope, but that is a challenge to tackle some of these bigger systemic issues. You know, you asked about climate change. Is it too late? It is not too late. Nature is very resilient. Now, we've delayed a long time. We should have gotten started reducing our greenhouse gas emissions years ago, but we can do it. And again, you're seeing bright spots. You look around this country, many states have enacted renewable portfolio standards to increase the amount of clean energy going into their energy mix. Texas, yeah. for example, is a real leader on that issue. So conservative states, liberal
Texas.
States, yes.
That surprises
yeah.
me.
Yeah, they have a lot of wind, they have a lot of solar energy, and they've harnessed that. And they're not necessarily doing it to fight climate change. They're doing it because it's good for the economy in Texas, but that's fine. Mm-hmm. So it's really about how do you connect people's day-to-day lives, the things they care about locally, in ways that can help solve some of these global problems.
This notion that the environment can be good for business, that's kind of an idea that people like you want to push and push hard,
Absolutely.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it can be.
Yes. So I grew up in love with nature. I grew up in Missouri, in St. Louis, on the other side of the state. Mm-hmm. But I studied economics. So I firmly believe that nature has value to the economy and to business. Just last week, we worked with the Dow Chemical Company, one of the world's biggest chemical producers. You wouldn't think that environment would be their business. But they've identified opportunities to create value for their shareholders by investing in nature conservation. Things like
how does it add value to their show?
So we worked with them in one of their biggest manufacturing facilities on the Gulf Coast in Texas. It's responsible for about 25% of their global sales. So what happens to that plant obviously affects their business overall. It's very vulnerable to coastal storms coming off the Gulf. Texas is having a drought. The plant needs water, so it's vulnerable to water shortages coming down the Brazos River. So we identified ways that investing in conserving nature, restoring the coastal marshes and oyster reefs along the shore, protecting forests upriver could actually provide value to the plant, protecting them against storm damage, providing more fresh water. As a result of that, just last week, Dow's CEO announced a goal to deliver $1 billion in value to Dow shareholders by investing in these kinds of conservation projects.
Hmm.
It's not the whole solution. Obviously, nature is priceless, so you can't put a dollar tag on everything. But we think it's an important part of the solution to get companies to wake up and take the issue seriously.
You know, on the global stage, Glenn, who's the most important player? Is it big business, or is it the leaders of the different governments around the planet? What have you noticed over the years?
So I firmly believe voters are the most important actor
really?
On the global stage. You and I, the three of us in this room, I mean, we have an opportunity to talk to our elected officials, to talk to businesses we do business with. So I think at the end of the day, voters are the most important. After that, I would say equally elected officials and business leaders. And they kind of work in synergy. It's hard for a politician to commit to a course of action if she or he doesn't see that business can actually do it.
Mm-hmm.
But you can have all the enlightened business leaders you want. If there's not laws and rules backing them up, it's not going to be enough. So you have to have the business community and the political establishment working in the same direction.
You know, to what extent are the governments around the world sort of working in sync with each other to take on these big issues that we're talking about here today, all the different big issues? You know, is there a sense that it's a new day when it comes to global cooperation, or are there key actors out there, key states that are really holding everything back?
Well, later this year, there'll be a big meeting of heads of state in Paris to talk about climate change. And we've seen a dramatic improvement over the last couple of decades. 20 years ago, most governments would say, hey, it's none of your business how I manage my environment. Today, those leaders will come together and say, hey, we've got to work together to solve this problem. You've seen the biggest positive change, interestingly, among some of the poorer countries, some of the developing countries like India, Brazil, South Africa. Those leaders are saying, hey, this climate change is affecting us. It's making our poor people poorer. It's making it harder to produce the food we need. So we need to solve the problem. We need to challenge ourselves here in this country to rise to that level of commitment to play our role in solving that global problem.
I was going to say, in a press release that came out this morning, both the League of Conservation Voters and the Sierra Club have given Congress a grade of F for its first 100 days of the current session when it comes to protecting air, water, and lands. That makes sense? Is that a fair grade, a fair assessment?
Well, we're not seeing the leadership we need. I bring it back to the voter. I mean, I think none of us are talking enough to our elected officials about why this issue matters in our communities. As I said, at the beginning of the show, we run these ballot initiatives. We do very well when we can connect the environment to local quality of life. Something happens between there and the halls of Congress. There's a big disconnect. So what we're trying to do at the Nature Conservancy in all 50 states is try to start that conversation over, talk to Republican elected officials as much as Democratic elected officials about why the environment matters. That's really what we need to do to try to get more leadership in Congress.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. On this Earth Day, we're visiting with a couple of terrific environmental experts, Glenn Prickett with the Nature Conservancy, Larry Rizzles with the Missouri Department of Conservation. Larry, what's your department's biggest challenge right now as you look across the board? We just did a show a few weeks ago about the conservation tax and sort of its imperil to some extent. What's your biggest concern? What's your department's biggest concern?
Well, at the political level, those types of issues come up occasionally, and
yeah,
that's certainly a cause for concern. I deal with things at more of a practical level, at more of a habitat scale level, and as I already mentioned, that's always a big one. The invasive species issue is in essence a habitat issue as well.
Mm-hmm.
There are things like disease issues and wildlife populations that seem to be increasingly problematic in Missouri, whether it's chronic wasting disease for deer, chytrid fungus affecting amphibians, or white nose syndrome in our bats. And in the case of those last two, they often are impacting species that are already rare.
Hmm.
And so those are great concern and you know, very problematic issues to wrap our arms around and find solutions for.
The deer issue you mentioned, that's becoming a very big issue, right? It could affect the hunt this year, and lots of concern amongst that population about what's going on there.
It's a huge issue, and we must remember that our deer population in Missouri, first of all, it provides a recreational outlet that hundreds of thousands of Missourians enjoy, and it's not just recreation. We have to think about the economic impact in rural Missouri when it comes to motels, restaurants, you know, sporting goods stores, et cetera, on and on. It's a huge economic boom.
So explain to our listeners, what is happening there? What is the issue with what the deer are up against?
Well, chronic wasting disease is a complicated disease that is not well understood. It's related somewhat to mad cow disease. It's related to these mysterious things called prions. Deer spread the disease to one another through contact with infected soil, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
We have an area in Missouri that north of here where chronic wasting disease, we've had a number of records of, and we're trying to contain it in that area and keep it contained in that area. But it's a big challenge. It's popped up in a number of states.
How do you do that with a population like deer that are running and jumping all over the place?
Well, they're trying to eliminate as many deer as possible from the hot spots to keep that from happening.
You mean you're shooting them?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
which has taken place in states like Wisconsin and other places that have had problems with this disease as well. And, you know, it could be a significant economic impact to Missouri if people don't view our deer population as safe to consume, because that's the ultimate objective of a deer hunter is to put meat on the table. But it's also potentially quite serious as it affects habitats, because if we can't control our deer population by hunting, deer are a large herbivore and have a tremendous impact on our natural communities, and an overpopulation of deer would not be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it has a lot of different tentacles, you might say, to that issue that are concern.
So when it comes to your position with the Missouri Department of Conservation, how do you engage with an issue like that? Are you involved in planning a strategy, you know, to sort of begin to take this on, Larry, or how does that work?
Well, the department's been very active with this issue because it does concern, you know, so many people in the state of Missouri. So we've had a lot of public meetings involving this. Of course, lots of outreach, you know, through the press and the media about what we're doing and why we're doing it. Hunters have been involved because through the years we've sampled deer at check stations and things like that from hunters to try to find infected animals. So we've had a lot of things going on with chronic wasting disease through the years, and it's not going to go away.
Are you hoping to get it? How confident are you that you can get it rounded up and checked this year?
Oh, we would never be in a position to say that we've got it under control anytime mm-hmm. soon. I can put it that way. We continue to monitor it and hope that it stays contained to that particular part of the state.
Yeah. Glenn, what does the Nature Conservancy, do in Kansas and Missouri, just in round terms? Maybe you both can chime in here. What is the Conservancy doing? What kind of projects are you guys aiming at out here?
Sure. So we protect land. We protect water. So in Kansas, for example, one of our more important projects right now is the Tallgrass Prairie National Preserve that we co-manage with the National Park Service. And what's interesting about the Tallgrass Prairie Preserve is that it's not all government-owned land. A lot of it is private land. So we work with private landowners, ranchers in that case, raising cattle, to help them manage the prairie in a way that's good for the environment, ecologically healthy. In Missouri, we do a lot of land conservation. We're also working very hard on both the Mississippi and Missouri rivers to try to both improve water quality, working with farmers all along those rivers to manage their farms better to reduce nutrient pollution into the rivers,
mm-hmm.
And also trying to restore a lot of the natural wetlands along the river, which basically serve as natural infrastructure to manage flooding, to try to keep communities safer from the floods that can that can cause tremendous harm by restoring those natural floodplains to let the rivers run and the floodplains do their job.
Let me get our listeners involved here. If you have a question for our guests, 816-235-2888 is our number. Again, 816-235-2888, or you can also tweet us at KCUR up to date. And I should just mention that Glenn Prickett will be the featured speaker at the University of St. Mary Hunger Banquet at 6 tonight in DePaul Library at the University of St. Mary in Leavenworth. Again, that's 6 o'clock tonight up in Leavenworth, the University of St. Mary. That event taking place. What about the whole Ogallala Aquifer out in, you know, a little bit west of here, but not much? That's becoming such a huge issue in Kansas. The water level is dropping. So many farmers and ranchers concerned about it. What about it?
So, Steve, it's not really my area of expertise.
Yeah.
Larry, I don't know if you knew more about it.
A little west for my area of expertise,
too. I was
going to
say, it's outside
basically
your state.
It's being exhausted at an unsustainable rate.
Mm-hmm.
And we can certainly safely say that.
And do you have any sense of what efforts are being done to deal with it, Larry, or am I catching you outside your jurisdiction here?
You are.
Yeah, okay. To what extent is conserving nature, let's talk a little bit more about how good it is for the bottom line, Glenn, and in the pitch that you make to businesses, how much of that is going on right now?
This is, to me, one of the more hopeful areas.
Mm-hmm.
You have a lot of business leaders who, at the very least, understand that their consumers care about the environment, so they don't want to be part of causing harm to the environment. But more and more, they're seeing that there's some value to the business, either by selling goods and services that are produced in an environmentally sound way. I talked about the companies trying to end deforestation in Brazil, or nature itself providing value to their operations, the example I gave from Dow Chemical. So we're seeing a lot more of that positive interest from the business community. It's very exciting. It's not enough. We also need to see elected officials, communities moving in the same direction.
You know, Larry, we just mentioned briefly the conservation tax. There's been lots of talk in Jefferson City this session about efforts to eliminate it, reduce it, delay it, lots of things going on. This is the 1/8 cent sales tax. Any sense of where that issue stands right now and what's being done to sort of, from your standpoint, protect that revenue source?
No, I can't speak to that too directly, Steve, but hopefully, you know, there are folks in our agency that are, of course, working with lawmakers, and hopefully we remind the general public periodically, too, of how important that tax has been to the citizens of Missouri and just what benefits are derived from it.
Yeah.
The 1/8 to 1% sales tax provides over 60% of our revenue. We are still, however, an agency that's a fraction of 1% of the overall state budget. People need to remember that.
And we talked about that here. Yeah.
And also think about the returns conservation makes to Missourians as far as economics, not just economics, of course, but aesthetics and quality of life issues and those types of things. And I truly believe, and I hope listeners and everyone else does too, that it's that tax provides a lot of bang for our buck, let's say.
Yeah. Let's go to some calls. Barbara from Pomona, Kansas. Barbara, you're on Up to Date.
Thank you. My question is, since solar power is becoming more popular and more affordable in Kansas, we just don't have anything like that. Are there any programs that are programs becoming more popular?
Solar power. Any thoughts here?
So thank you, Barbara. It's a great question. I'm afraid I can't speak to what's happening in Kansas, but in many states around the country, you're seeing renewable portfolio standards enacted that basically call on electric utilities to generate more electricity from solar and wind and other renewable sources. I mentioned Texas is a real leader in this area.
Right.
So it is a great possibility, and there's a real opportunity to help clean our energy mix in ways that make good business sense.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Do you expect costs going down in such a way, Glenn, that the typical homeowner might be thinking about at least partially offsetting their electricity costs through solar energy?
Yeah, the costs of solar are really plummeting, and there's a lot of interest across the country among homeowners to install household solar, so much so that it's become a business problem for a lot of the utilities because they're not able to charge those customers then for some of the costs they need to maintain the electrical grid. So this is actually a barrier right now to increasing penetration of solar photovoltaics. So it's a policy problem we have to solve. It's got to be solved basically state by state with each utility commission to figure out how do we allow that to happen and allow the utilities to be able to fund the system upgrade that they need. But it's a big issue now.
Just a final point, Glenn. Working to reduce poverty overseas is a focus of a conservancy. What are you guys doing to improve livelihoods even overseas?
So I'm really passionate about this. From being a kid growing up here in Missouri, I love nature, but I also began to see that there's real value to nature to improve people's livelihoods. A favorite example of mine comes out of the Andes in South America. We're working with cities in the Andes, places like Quito, Ecuador, or Cali, Colombia, who are running short of water, to set up programs that fund poor farmers in the mountains around those cities to protect and restore forests on their farms, to put more water back into the rivers. Huh. So these poor farmers become water producers as well as agricultural producers. So they make more money, they can improve their livelihoods, the cities get the water they need. So it's a great way to finance economic development locally. We provide technical help, but the money is all generated locally, so I'm really excited about that.
Do you have a real educational sales job to do in situations like that where you go to a farmer and you say, here's what we'd like you to do, and the farmer says, is that really going to make any difference? Putting more trees on my land is going to help with water down the hill?
Yeah, it's not a hard case to make. I think the challenge is connecting all the dots for that individual farmer to feel confident they're part of something big enough to make a difference.
Yeah.
So that's where we come in, is kind of putting that whole network together.
Okay. Again, Glenn Prickett speaks this evening at 6 at the University of St. Mary up in Leavenworth. More information on that on our website, kcur.org. I want to thank Glenn Prickett with the Nature Conservancy and Larry Rizzo with the Missouri Department of Conservation. Gentlemen, thanks so much. Sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Happy Earth Day.
happy Earth Day to you guys.